No, this is not a Christmas sermon. This is a giving sermon. You know, in our society today, we are well acquainted with giving and receiving of gifts. And there are many dates on the calendar that give us an opportunity to exchange gifts, to give gifts, and even to receive gifts for various reasons. Of course, Christmas is the big one. We all like to gather around the Christmas tree and we like to give each other gifts. And of course, the world has given us Santa Claus and the Christmas tree that we can decorate and we can put gifts under. And we can give each other gifts at this particular time of the year. And there's nothing wrong with that. We just, of course, as members of the church, we need to keep the church doctrine out of Christmas because, for number one, the Scriptures doesn't give it to us. But it's a big day to give and receive gifts. We also have other days, such as birthdays. We have Mother's Day. We have Father's Day. And here recently, we have even added Grandparents' Day. Days that we can show appreciation to those that we love for being a part of our family and being a part of our lives. We also give gifts for milestones, such as perhaps graduation, a housewarming, or maybe even a promotion on a job that we use to congratulate people for their accomplishments and milestones that they have made in life. And you know, usually when we give a gift or when we receive a gift, we do so with great excitement and great joy because we really appreciate being able to think of other people and we really appreciate being thought of ourselves. But you know, sometimes that's not always true. Sometimes we do not appreciate a gift that has been given to us. And you can usually tell when you give somebody something that they just really didn't want. It's hard to hide an expression, isn't it? And sometimes our face will tell a greater story than our lips will. And sometimes we give that look that, you know, I just really wish you hadn't given me this. I remember so well when I was in third grade, we had our class Christmas party. And this was back in the days when you could have parties at school and you could call it Christmas party at school. You can't do that anymore. But you know, we had our third grade Christmas party. And one of the things that we did, all the kids, they brought a gift. A boy brought a boy gift and a girl brought a girl gift. And we would exchange gifts between the kids. And everybody got a new gift. I got a new gift. You know what it was? It was a belt. It was a belt that didn't even fit. Everybody else was getting toys. Guys got guns and they got trucks and they got things they could play with at their desk. Girls got dolls. They got stationery sets. They got all these pretty little things to play with. And here I am sitting there with my belt. And I even got in trouble because I whirled it around my head a couple of times and had my belt taken away from me. I did not appreciate that belt. I can't imagine any mother of a third grader that would give a belt to give to someone else. At least that was my thinking at the time. I did not like the belt. At Christmas time, when Christmas was all over with and the gifts were all given out, my daddy would always ask me, after Santa Claus came, he says, "Well, did you get everything you wanted?" And I very politely would say, "Yes." But you know, I really didn't want the socks or the underwear. And he always brought me socks and underwear. He brought me all the good stuff too, but always got socks and underwear. And I really didn't appreciate that. Sometimes we don't appreciate our gifts, do we? We really wish they had been something else. You know, we're the very same way with God. Sometimes we don't appreciate things that God gives us. And there's not a person in this room that is not blessed greatly by God. He has given us so much from the day that we were born, and He will continue to give to us until the day that we die. The greatest gift was His Son. Another great gift was His Word that helps us to live in a way that we can live with Him and the Son when this life is over. But you know, you'd be surprised how many people do not appreciate what God gives us. And sometimes we feel that maybe God has really missed the mark because He didn't give us what we expected to get from Him. And that's the frame of mind of a lot of people today, that God, yeah, He may give us things, but, you know, He really doesn't give us what we expect. I've had people come up to me and say, you know, I've prayed for this for years, and I didn't get it. I got something else, and it's not what I wanted. Why didn't God give me what I wanted? Well, it could be that He gave you what you needed instead of what you wanted. But we really didn't appreciate what God has done for us. This is true throughout the Bible, and particularly in one thing. God promised us a king. It's been written throughout the Old Testament, prophecies of a coming king. Now, you know, in our own feeble way of thinking, when I think of a king, I think of something like this you see on the screen. To me, that's a king. Now, I can go to the Scriptures, and I can read John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, and this is what the king sounds like. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. Boy, we like that reading, don't we? God has sent His Son to give us something very wonderful. He's going to be a king. And we get excited about that. And John was 100% accurate when he described Jesus Christ in this way. But then if you turn over to Luke, his description of the entrance of the Son of God is quite different. When the Son of God actually came to this world, He did not come with all the pomp and flair that we expect a king to come into our being in that way. Instead, according to Luke, He gave us a helpless baby. And in many of the eyes that didn't believe the prophecy, this so-called king was conceived out of wedlock. And He wasn't born in a palace like kings are supposed to be born in. He was born in a barn. His parents were not royalty, a mere carpenter and wife. He wasn't welcomed into the world with pomp and flair of society. He was welcomed into the world by barn animals and shepherds. According to John 6 and verse 15, when people wanted Him to become a king, He ran away. He didn't want to be called king as they wanted to call Him king. So He left them. And according to Matthew 26, when the soldiers came to get Him on the night of His betrayal, and Peter drew his sword and cut off Malchus's ear, Jesus told him, "Put away your sword. Do you not think that I cannot pray to my Father and He will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels and can destroy every Roman soldier that exists?" 12 legions of angels, by the way, is 72,000 soldiers. Heavenly soldiers at that, that Jesus could have called in had He wanted. But He didn't. Instead, He went to the cross. He was not what the people expected. And He was not what the people wanted. But the truth is, He was everything that we needed. You know, this morning we read the story of Jesus giving another man a gift, the gift of freedom from demons. This man had been smitten by demons. He was controlled by demons. He was tormented by demons. He was a great nuisance and problem to the people around him. So Jesus cast the demons out into the swine, as the reading gave us, and then, of course, perished in the sea. But I want us to look for just a moment at how people responded to this gift that God gave to this man. Jesus had just come into the land of Gerasenes, or Gadrazine. It's called both. And this covers the most of the eastern part of the lake of the Sea of Galilee. This is what the area actually looks like today. If you were to go there, this is what you would see. It was at the city of Gadara, which is in the lower section of the Gerasenes, that he met the man that was demon possessed. Jesus cast the demons out. After talking with the demons, he cast them into the swine, and of course they drowned in the sea. And news spread like wildfire. And at the end of our story, and I don't think we read that far this morning, at the end of this story, the demon-possessed man comes back to Jesus, sits at his feet, fully clothed, and in his right mind. The Lord had given him a tremendous gift. Isn't that a wonderful story? But you know, this story doesn't end here, because now the other people get involved. Now let's look and see how the people responded to Jesus. Well, first of all, the men who owned the swine ran. They ran away. According to Luke 8, verse 34, those who fed the swine ran from him. Do you know we have people today that will run from Jesus? They don't want anything to do with him. They know what he has done. They know what he's capable of doing for us. And yet we don't want anything today to do with him. We run from him. We've had people running from God since time began. Our first man and woman, Adam and Eve, ran from God in the garden when they committed their sin and realized what they had done. They ran and hid from God. We have another story that we covered in our vacation Bible school, and that was of Jonah, who ran from God because he did not want to obey what God had asked him to do. But then you read words that come from our psalmist David. David says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even your hand shall lead me." In other words, David is saying, there's nowhere that I can go and hide and run from God. And we know that. And the people that ran and through the Scriptures knew that. But yet that's our thinking. We run away from God. Yet there are people who don't want anything to do with him. And then other people, when they heard this word, it scared them. And so they asked Jesus to leave. Luke chapter 8, verse 37, "And then all the people in the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear." They were around holiness. They were around godliness. And they wanted no part of it. It frightened them to be around someone who lived a godly life. Have you ever been in that situation where people know that you're a Christian and they're not, and they're just a little bit uncomfortable with you being around? I've had this to happen to me several times. I've noticed in times past that I can walk into a room where people know me and know what I do for a living. And when I walk into the room, all the laughing stops, and the joke telling stops, and all eyes are on me. Number one, they know that I won't appreciate this ungodliness that obviously they're participating in. They know they're being out of line, but they don't want me to know they're out of line. And they wait until I leave, and they're glad to see me out. I know on one occasion, Pat and I had just been married. We'd been married about 3 years. Mandy was on the way. And I had the privilege of performing my supervisor's wedding ceremony when I worked at Motorola. So he comes up to me a few days before and he said, "Now, I just want you to know this, again, I don't want to offend you, but we plan on having alcohol at our wedding because we plan to toast each other with champagne. And is that going to offend you to be in the building when we do that?" Well, I thanked him for being conscious of my feelings. And I told him, I said, "You know, I'm really not the one you need to worry about. I said, I hope you won't be offended if I don't participate in that." So anyway, when I got there, Pat and I walked in the door, and I knew most of the folks there because most of the folks were Motoroleans like me. And I noticed that when I walked in the door, people saw me coming in, and they had their drinks in their hand, and, well, they'd put it behind their back. Or they would sit it on a table and then do this to get away from the table, so I wouldn't think it was theirs. And they were that way until I left. And they could not wait for me to leave. Because I represented godliness to them. I represented something they didn't want to be a part of, but they didn't want to be the way they were in the presence of it. Isn't that sad that we do that to each other? But you know, the presence of Jesus can be a threat to the world. Worldly people do not want to be in the presence of godliness. And that's just a couple of examples of it. Because you know, ungodliness is a very costly thing. And people will react this way for sure. There's one other reaction I want to talk about, and that's the man himself that was healed. He came back to Jesus and he said, "I want to go with you." He begged Jesus, "Let me go with you." He was so impressed and he was so thankful and so happy that the Lord had done what he'd done for him. He wanted to be with him. But we read in verse 38 that the Lord told him, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." Even though Jesus did not allow him to go with him, he gave this man a message to share. He gave him a mission. Go tell other people what has happened here, what I have done for you. Spread the word of what God can do. You know, he told Peter something very similar in John 13, verse 36, on the night of the betrayal. He told Peter, he said, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now. But you will follow me later on, afterward." And he gives us the same message. We couldn't go with Christ when he left this earth, but he did leave us a mission to go into all the world and preach the gospel. And in Matthew's form, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and I am with you always." Jesus has given us a mission. No, we can't go to him right now. We can't be with him right now. But we can do what he has asked us to do. You see, God has given us a gift. He's given us more than one gift. He has given us the forgiveness of our sins, and he has given us a home to come to when this life is over. And even though we can't go there right now, we can tell other people about it so that they can go as well. And that's what he has asked of us. The same thing that he asked of this man who at one time was demon-possessed. Go tell people about me. So we have been given a gift. Now, it may not be the gift that we expected. It may not even be the gift that we really want, but it is a gift nevertheless. And we are to share that gift with a lost and dying world. When you look at the gift of Jesus Christ, what do you see? How do you feel about what He has given to you and me today? My advice is that you embrace it, that you live it, and that you proclaim it to everyone that you can, because it is a gift, the most precious gift from God. This morning, if you are not a Christian, give your life to Him, and He will give you this gift. If you are a Christian and you walk back into sin, come back to the Lord today. The gift is still there. It is still yours if you want it. You can still have it. It's a wonderful gift. Something that we didn't expect, because this is something that God did not have to do. But He did. Embrace it and appreciate it. This morning, if you need to respond to the invitation, please come while we stand to sing.